Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
And they have no plan to pay for it. Their actions are the height of irresponsible and reckless budgeting. And this morning, I vetoed it.
The emergency is so great about more teachers leaving than coming into the profession that I think we may have to make it the highest priority to raise the income of our teachers.
This budget is really focused, laser focused, on delivering affordability, lowering costs for people of Arizona.
What are your low priority items that you will jettison in the event you don't get the federal money, which quite frankly is rather doubtful from this Republican's ear on the rail?
We talked a little bit about the amount of fees that we're going. I kind of lost count of the amount of taxes and fees we're talking about adding. So we know those aren't going anywhere.
We can have secure systems, transparent processes, and accessible voting, but only if the legislature is willing to pay for them.
We cannot keep funding this type of goon squads that are just spreading throughout the whole country just to enforce some weird policy position that Stephen Miller has, where he thinks that we have to punish blue cities.
And joining me to talk about the governor's budget proposal, what's next for tax conformity and more, are Paul Bentz of High Ground. Paul, good morning.
Good morning.
And former congressional staffer Roy Herrera. Roy, good morning to you.
Good morning. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. So, Roy, let me start with you on Governor Hobbs's budget proposal. Not a surprise that, you know, Democrats are generally positive about it. Republicans are generally not. I'm curious, when you look at some of the biggest controversy, I guess, from the Republican side, it's not even so much what it's spending money on. It's where it proposes getting the money from to begin with.
That's right. I mean, I think the biggest battle is related to this tax conformity issue, right? Which is to say, you know, how much of the big, beautiful bill, the federal package that was passed last year, do we adopt here in Arizona? And I think the governor has taken a very sensible approach in picking from that provisions that will primarily help middle class Arizonans. So things like raising the standard deduction, raising deduction for people over 65, you know, eliminating taxation on overtime and tips, those are all things that will help middle-class Arizonans and I think would largely be popular. I think there's a big difference, though, between that package and what I think the Republicans want to do, which is essentially take all of the tax cuts and more that were in the big, beautiful bill, including a lot of, you know, tax cuts related to businesses, and have that be passed. We all knew that the Republicans were going to pass this immediately and it was going to get vetoed immediately. And so a lot of what's happening right now is, I think, a bit performative. No
Wait,
surprise.
Are you saying there's performance politics happening at the state capitol, Roy?
Yeah, exactly. Every day, especially in an election year, especially the first week of legislature, right? And so now that it's been vetoed, we'll get into the nitty-gritty of negotiations because there has to be a compromise. And to your point, I mean, there are things, again, that the governor has proposed that I think are sensible. You know, things like, you know, a water use fee for data centers, things like, you know, a tax on short-term rentals, Airbnbs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Again, these are things I think most Arizonans would agree with as good ideas when it comes to raising revenue. Because at the end of the day, you know, there is a thing called responsible budgeting. I mean, you can't get everything you want. And every tax cut you propose obviously has a corresponding reduction in revenue. And that will likely have a corresponding reduction in services. And so you have to pick and choose what makes the most sense when it comes to what's going to help, you know, average everyday middle-class Arizonans versus, you know, pie-in-the-sky stuff.
So, Paul, I'll ask you about the tax conformity issue in a minute, but I want to get your take on, you know, as Roy said, you know, the tax fee, whatever you want to call it, on short-term rentals, the data center water fee. The governor's also kind of banking on getting several hundred million dollars from the federal government to pay the state back for the cost of covering border security and immigration. It seems like a lot of Republicans are like, none of that's going to happen.
Right. I think, you know, one of the things that Roy pointed out that I think is true, this is political theater. My wife overheard me say that the other day and she said, that's a play nobody wants to watch. And it's true. I mean, we're in a little bit of political theater here. The governor clearly – we're a long way from a few years ago where we had surpluses and it was you get $10 million, you get $10 million. Let's put the projects on the Christmas tree and call it good. We're in a spot now where we are definitely challenged when it comes to the budget, potentially a deficit. Long-term spending is not where it is. And so that certainly, as most Democrats do, the governor has gone to a fee structure or taxes. And Republicans sort of fundamentally are opposed to a lot of those taxes. I think the ones that she's chosen are pretty wise. I think they probably tested well in survey research and others. You know, you talk about data centers aren't particularly popular right now. Water is a huge issue. Those are a couple of things. Putting a means test on vouchers, for example, certainly is another one that I think would pass muster with the vast majority of the electorate. So she's trying to find places to increase revenue, but she knows those are probably no-goes at the legislature. This is about positioning for November of this year, the midterm election. Who's getting what? The Republicans put forth the budget or the big beautiful bill, tax mm-hmm. cuts conformity right away so that they could give it to her and she could veto it. That was on purpose so that Andy Biggs and others – Biggs was railing against her yesterday saying she doesn't care about it. With we're going to talk about immigration enforcement at some point, I'm sure. With immigration falling down as a top issue facing the states, but it really been replaced by affordability and high costs. So this is going to be a competition between Republicans and Democrats on who's taking the lead when it comes to affordability.
Well, so you both mentioned tax conformity. We know that nothing moves policymakers like a deadline. There's a very clear deadline here. I mean, people are going to start trying to file their taxes maybe now. And yet, at least as far as the state goes, we still don't know what the rules are going to be. Like, they got to figure something out here, right?
You would think. I mean, they never waste a good deadline. But I think what we're going to find is that it's going to drag on for a while. Neither side has really demonstrated a desire to negotiate. Mm. It's a sort of an unfortunate hallmark of where we are legislatively and with where we are is I think both groups, basically the governor and the legislature, sort of propose their ideas and then there's not a lot of let's get together and hash this out. I mean Roy might be a little bit more optimistic than I am about it, but I just don't see a ton of negotiation happening.
Are you more optimistic than Paul is?
Well, I'm only as optimistic as the fact that eventually a budget has to get done. Now, I'm not optimistic in that it's going to happen anytime soon. I mean, there are things that, you know, people are sort of presuming that have to get done as part of the budget, including Prop 123. Well, I don't think we have any sense of what a compromise on Prop 123 would actually look
like
at this point.
The education referral that expired last year that the legislature didn't send to the ballot and ended up backfilling with state money, which I think they probably don't want to do again this year.
Exactly. So we'd have to go to the ballot again. And I think both sides are just sort of presumptuous and saying, okay, well, we're going to have this Prop 123 money, but they're not really discussing what a bipartisan agreement would look like there. I mean, maybe they are and we don't know about it, but at this point, it doesn't seem like there's any agreement. So I'm optimistic in the sense that it's going to eventually happen. But to your point, we are facing tax filing. I mean, there are some concerns with that. I mean, the deadline's a couple months away, but you could theoretically start filing now. So people may want that certainty. And I know the Republicans immediately, after the veto were arguing, oh, well, we have this deadline. How dare you? Governor Hobbs veto this thing. Well, it's not like this is a static thing. I mean, obviously, the negotiations can begin now in over the next few weeks to try to get something done. That would be, a sensible thing. But of course, this is politics. This is an election year. And everyone, I totally agree with Paul's point, which is that everyone is arguing over, again, who's going to address this affordability concern that voters have, because clearly that is a real concern. That's what's making people, I think, so anxious and upset at their elected officials. So who's going to win the messaging battle there, I think, is really going to determine how the compromise gets done.
Paul, is there also a messaging battle on defining affordability? Because the governor's argument is that she wants elements of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act that specifically target what she's calling middle class voters. Republicans are saying we also want to help small business who are also sometimes struggling with affordability. So I wonder if there's maybe a messaging battle here over like who gets to be counted in needing or wanting affordability as well.
That's 100% right. I think that we've got this battle for defining the messaging on a wide variety of topics. Affordability is certainly one of them. Abortion's another. There's multiple topics right now that are being battled over where they're going to propose things that are just about trying to play gotcha with your opponent. And so, yeah, I mean, you talk about sort of the tax breaks. The federal government wants to give the tax breaks outright. Governor wants to amortize them. The Republicans want to give those away. The governor's calling those tax breaks for billionaires and millionaires, and they're calling them tax breaks for small business owners. So there is a battle internally of what even these tax breaks look like. Ultimately, what we find time and time again is that voters like lower taxes, not higher taxes, and that people feel right now that there's a pinch. When gas prices are up, it's certainly they're down at the moment, but when they're up, it's a much more acutely felt issue among the electorate. As they come down and other things come down, we feel it less. But really what we are seeing is You know, it used to be education and immigration battled for the top issue facing the state. Affordability, inflation, those types of topics have shot to the top of the list and are certainly what people are thinking about right now.
Paul, is this the kind of issue, the tax conformity issue, that maybe, I don't know, the legislature and governor should have been debating in August or September, not January or February?
Certainly feels that way, doesn't it? I mean, it feels like they knew the big, beautiful bill was going to be passed. They knew it was something they had to deal with. They waited for the session to start. It's sort of almost like they waited for the year to change. Is there something happening? Oh, that's right, an election. I think they waited for an election year to start addressing it.
And Roy, this is one of those issues. You know, you talk about, you know, do they pass a budget on time or not? They always do. But when you're talking about filing your taxes, this is one that like voters will very much come into contact with, whereas a lot of the issues that state government deals with, like there's some people you maybe it sort of tangentially affects your life or maybe it every so often affects your life. This is going to be a direct influence on a lot of people's lives.
That's right. I mean, of course, that still somewhat depends on what the final deal is,
sure,
right? And how many people are affected by whatever change happens later. But yes, I mean, this is something everybody files their taxes. And so, you know, you could theoretically, you know, face an adjustment later that might be annoying to you. Although if it's an adjustment later that's going to like save you some money, then you're probably
yeah,
going right. to be okay with it. But
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there is some pressure from that. There is pressure from the fact that, you know, it is an election year. But, you know, so the reverse of that is people at some point are going to want to start going to go electioneering,
right,
go campaigning,
yeah,
right?
And collecting contributions from lobbyists.
Exactly. So there is some pressure the other way eventually. So that's why I think at the end of the day, both sides are going to come to the table, and maybe this is my optimistic version here of this, but because they have to come to the table with some sort of compromise, particularly, again, because there has to be and there should be at least some conformity from the, you know, what I would view as the good parts of the big, beautiful bill, which are, you know, related again to middle class tax cuts.
All right. Roy's got his glass half full. Paul seems to have his glass half empty here. Roy, this week, the Arizona Secretary of State, Adrian Fontes, along with some Democratic legislative leaders, introduced a proposal called the Voters First Act. Some of the provisions include more money for administering elections, the restoration of the permanent early voting list, extending early voting through 5 o'clock p.m. the Monday before Election Day. This is all, of course, in contrast to the Arizona Secure Elections Act, which does in some ways the opposite of some of those things, which went through a Senate committee this week. I'm curious, like obviously, you know, there's going to be a debate potentially about some of these ideas. Given the fact that there are two very competing proposals, one from Democrats, one from Republicans, is it too much of a stretch to say the one from Democrats probably isn't going very far?
Yeah, this is where I think I have to drop my optimistic label for the last second and return to my
Sorry
usual
to bring you down.
my return to my usual negativity. But you know, I think the Democratic plan isn't going to go anywhere. That's not to say it's not a good plan. It is, I think, from my perspective, a very good plan. I think most people, particularly when it comes to restoring the permanent early voting list like we had it before, is something, again, that I think Arizonans would like. There's other things in there as well, like, for example, changing to a voting center model, you know, in every county. That's something we enjoy here in Maricopa County, mm-hmm. but often in rural Arizona, it's a precinct model, which can sometimes be annoying to voters. I mean, everything in the bill is – in the proposal is designed to make voting easier for people. I contrast that with the Republican proposal, which, you know, would go to the ballot – which I view is just making voting harder for people. I mean, it would limit ways and timing for people to vote, all in exchange for. And this is the question I always ask myself with a lot of these Republican proposals and attacks on our voting system: is for what? What is the purpose that, you know, what do we get out of these changes? I think, you know, the Alex Collins of the world would say, well, people want you know, the results faster, and so we have to make these changes in order that people can get results. I'm not sure I buy that, and I know we're joined by the Capitol's best pollster, but I mean the polling that I see when people are asked, you know, hey, would you exchange, you know, a limitation on voting for getting results faster? Most people say no. They'd rather have, you know, more ways and easier ways to vote than the other thing. And so, like everything else related to this topic, coming from the Republican side, it's always to me a solution in search of a problem. I don't really understand why we need to make these changes. In fact, it'll just make the system worse.
Well, Paul, let me ask you sort of a related pollster type question, which is, let's assume this measure gets on the ballot. Is this a driver of voters to the polls one way or the other? Does this have any up or down ballot impact if a voting related measure is on the ballot?
Well, Maybe a little bit, but I suspect that we're going to see several items on the ballot. I think that the Republicans in the legislature showed last cycle that they were very successful putting multiple items on the ballot, and it helped their turnout. So I suspect they'll do that again. Things that the polling demonstrates, number one, early voting is incredibly popular. Number two, voters want more ways to access and vote, not less. You know, I think the problem that they think they're in search of is sort of that national dialogue of what's wrong with Arizona. And the answer to that, that everyone needs to speak vociferously about, is that nothing's wrong. We give people an opportunity to vote. Now, dropping off by 5 o'clock on Monday is going to make it take even longer. But I think we just saw in the 2025 off-cycle elections, the recorder and others demonstrated that they could count those ballots faster. If they are able to open them, if they're able to tabulate them, that we could get the ballots back pretty quickly. The challenge is that we are a competitive state. And so every race, you know, is close. And the question you always have to ask yourself is you can be fast, you can be accurate, or you can be inclusive. You can't be all three. So which two do you want? And so I think Republicans want to be fast. And I think Democrats want to be inclusive. So the question is, who really wants to be more accurate and make sure that we're getting the most reliable results? It's been a while. We are coming back finally where there's still some confidence. There's better confidence in our election system. But there was a period of time where a majority of Republicans did not have faith that the results. I think we're past that. I think the majority of Republicans probably now think that the results are accurate, probably because their guy won. That helps. You know, when your person wins, suddenly everything's great. You know, when you're the victor, it's everything was great. It's wonderful. That wasn't pass interference, you know, I mean, like, things like that. When your team wins, you never see the penalties on the field. So I think that's what they're pushing for. But it certainly some of the proposals they have, they're wise to package them up the way that they've done because some of what they're offering is very popular and we'll be able to sell it as we're going to get results faster. But there are other things here that certainly limit voter participation.
So, Paul, voters might also get to vote on whether or not to do away with photo radar. That seems like one that maybe isn't sort of in the zeitgeist quite as much as elections. But as we were talking about with taxes, this is something that affects you know, in those cities and counties that have speed enforcement cameras, something that people come into contact with, is this the kind of thing that voters would be inclined to say, yeah, let's get rid of these?
I certainly think it's going to be a challenging issue. There's certainly data that demonstrates that photo radar is impactful and helpful, particularly when it comes to things like red light running. The question is, do you want to have a statewide vote for a couple of cities and a couple of areas that use it? It seems to me like it would be, why don't you have votes in those communities of whether or not they want to have those items and let them choose locally whether they want to keep them in place? Because while it may not be as popular statewide in places that don't have them, a lot of communities that have it really like it and want it. And so that's sort of the balance here. You having the state tell a local community what to do when really they want to fend for themselves.
Does this become kind of a preemption issue, at least the argument wise, for not doing something like this?
Well, I think it's a good argument. I mean, I totally agree with Paul. Like at the end of the day, to me, it makes more sense to have, you know, the decision made at the local level, at the municipal level, because again, ultimately that's where it's, you know, being enforced and in only certain areas in the state. If it got to a statewide ballot, and again, I defer to the Capitol's best pollster here, but it just seems to me that it would have a high likelihood of passing, mostly because I just, you know, my informal survey of family members, is, right. You know, when they say, you know, I'm annoyed by the fact that I got this ticket in the mail, I can get rid of that, would probably say yes to that. But that doesn't mean that it's sensible public policy. That's a different question. And I think in this instance, you know, there are studies that show that this does help public safety, you know, from a perspective of like red light running and keeping, you know, traffic accidents to a low. But, you know, again, you know, people are going to look at it like, well, I'm not particularly a fan of these cameras because I get a ticket. so therefore, you know, I'm going to vote, you know, to ban this thing statewide.
Yeah. Most people, I guess, are not in favor of speeding tickets or red light tickets. Right.
Well, so firefighters are the most popular. Besides nurses, firefighters are the most popular individuals in the state and have been for many, many years. You always find police are much, much lower. And the general belief is, you know, firefighters save your life. Police are the ones who give you tickets. And so they're always less popular than their sort of public safety counterparts. And in this case, it's a robot giving you a ticket. And so, you know, nobody really wants that. But that said, it's – you know, making your decision for other communities is certainly a challenge and limits their ability to do what they think is best for the safety of their community.
So, Paul, we've been talking about some upcoming elections. There's an election coming up tomorrow in Arizona with the state Republican Party picking a new chair. Gina Swoboda, of course, will be stepping down because she's running for a Congress. I'm curious what you are watching for, like what, you know, what sort of are you looking for at this meeting during this vote that might tell us something about sort of how the state party is feeling going into further elections?
Well, two things. One, I suspect it's going to be acrimonious. We're already seeing attacks on Pam Kirby, who's sort of a presumptive front runner, one of the people that we're seeing a lot of that's been around for quite a while. I think so that we're going to see, I think it's not going to be cut and dried. The last time around, there was questions about the ballots and voter fraud and, you know, all sorts of played out in the national dialogue played out locally. I think the biggest thing that I'm watching is how big of an influence does Turning Point have? Turning Point is what won the state for Republicans, not necessarily some of the other things that they're taking credit for. So what sort of influence, who's the Turning Point chosen candidate? What influence do they have over the outcome of the election? Because I think they're the biggest force in Republican politics right now.
So, Roy, very quickly before we go, while you're popping popcorn to watch this, what are you and Democrats going to be watching for?
Oh, man. Well, if I'm watching it, then it's a pretty sad day for me, I think. But yeah, I mean, I agree with Paul. I think it is – and I think this is going to be a theme for this entire election, quite frankly, is it is a question about Turning Point's influence and power both within the Republican Party and in a general election. I think it's unquestioned, you know, their power within the Republican Party. And so I think just, you know, from an outsider's perspective that their candidate, their chosen candidate is likely to be the new chair because of that influence. But what I'm waiting to see is whether that influence translates in a general election, because I don't think we've seen that at all, really, at least at the statewide level here in Arizona. Obviously, they're supporting Andy Biggs in the Republican gubernatorial primary.
Yeah.
I think it's likely he's going to be the nominee going against Governor Hobbs. And I put Governor Hobbs as the favorite in that matchup. But I think, again, it's going to be a real test. Does the Turning Point, you know, influence translate to not just core Republican MAGA voters, but to all voters in Arizona?
Interesting. All right. We'll have to leave it there. Roy Herrera, Paul Benz, thanks you both for the conversation. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.